This episode is brought to you by Dietz and Watson.
Molly, it's time we have the talk about hot dogs.
Okay. Well, hey, I'm looking for a hot dog that's the real deal, Matthew.
Like a classic hot dog that, like, when you think of, like, the platonic ideal of a hot dog, I recommend Dietz and Watson's Dietz dogs.
Ah, well, I've heard that they're handcrafted and made using only Dietz and Watson premium meat.
I can vouch for this because Dietz and Watson sent us a big box of hot dogs and other delights, and wife of the show, Lori, and I had them for dinner last night. We had the classic beef Dietz dogs with toasted buns with sauerkraut and pickled jalapenos and Dietz and Watson ballpark-style yellow mustard.
Do you think you'd recommend Dietz and Watson hot dogs for fried rice?
Oh, yeah. Fried rice with some sliced hot dogs. I'm going to be doing that soon. Wife of the show, Lori, is going to be making the hot dog flour buns from Christina Cho's cookbook, Mooncakes and Milk Bread. Very excited for this.
And I'm especially pleased because Dietz and Watson does things the right way. So this means, like, no additives, no fillers, no artificial flavors, no cutting corners. You can feel good about this stuff.
Dietz and Watson. It's a family thing since 1939.
Shop now at dietzandwatson.com/the right way.
That's Dietz, D-I-E-T-Z, and watson.com/the right way. I'm Mummy.
And I'm Molly.
And this is Spilled Milk, the show where we cook something delicious, eat it all, and you can't have any.
Today, we are talking about oyster sauce.
Yes.
Nothing says mid-March like oyster sauce.
That's true. Tis the season of the shellfish.
Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. Well,
You're supposed to eat oyster sauce in months with an R in them, right?
Yeah, that's how it goes.
Nailed it.
Okay. Today's episode was suggested by listener and guest, Kenji. Kenji's last name will be revealed shortly when he joins
us. Oh, wow. What a great tease.
I know. I'll give you guys a hint. You know this guy, and you're going to be very excited to hear from this
guy. Okay, I haven't figured it out yet, I'm looking forward to being surprised.
Okay, so Matthew, let's hit memory lane first. For me, this memory lane is very short. I don't have much of a memory lane of consciously eating things cooked with oyster sauce or cooking with oyster sauce or using oyster sauce myself. However, I think I've probably eaten a lot of oyster sauce in my life and not known it.
Sure.
Yeah.
Is it a condiment that you've kept, like, on hand for cooking or no?
No.
All right.
But I don't know how I've avoided keeping it on hand because...
I mean, I didn't mean that to sound judgmental.
It shows up in so many important ways in many dishes.
Yeah, like sometimes as an ingredient and sometimes just as a companion.
Yes.
To, like, keep on the counter to make you feel warm and fuzzy. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. What about
like
you?
Like a stuffed mummy.
What's on your oyster sauce memory lane?
Okay, I've been cooking with this for as long as I can remember, but have never really given it a lot of thought as kind of a standalone player, except in the context of gai lan, like Chinese broccoli with oyster sauce at dim sum.
Mm-hmm.
That's like the main place where like the oyster sauce sort of not stands on its own because it's a condiment for the broccoli, but where that's like the primary flavor in my experience.
Did your family go out for dim sum when you were a kid?
Yeah, absolutely. At trying to remember where, Fong Chong Noodle House in Portland.
Do you think you would have eaten something with the description involving oyster sauce? Because, you know, in retrospect,
that's a really good question.
Like looking down my desolate memory lane, I wonder how much of the fact that I don't have a lot of conscious memories of oyster sauce has to do with the fact that I wouldn't eat oysters until I was like 30.
Yeah, so I feel the same way about oysters, and I think it all would have come down to like whether the word oyster sauce was mentioned.
Yes.
Because like if it was like, I did like broccoli as a kid, and so if it was like broccoli with a tasty brown sauce, I would have been in.
Yeah.
If the word oyster had come up, then maybe not.
You would have been out.
Right.
Opposite of in.
Broccoli with oyster sauce, non-Chinese broccoli, also very good. And beef with oyster sauce is a dish that I've had and made a number of times.
Mm, okay.
And that typically like also has other seasonings, not just oyster sauce, but oyster sauce is like the star of the show. Just like it's the star of this show.
It is the star of this show. Move over, host Mummy and host Molly. Oyster sauce
That's right.
is
oh,
the
I
new
forgot
star.
It was Host Mummy. I don't even remember. Like I was making jokes about mummies before we started recording, and that's why I was Host Mummy, in case you needed context.
Yeah,
on
it
that.
Was only like 3 minutes ago or something. But in case you forgot,
but it feels like another era.
I'm realizing so many things as we talk about oyster sauce here. But one thing I'm realizing is that I think that my early understanding or my early knowledge of oyster sauce, I think I wasn't even sure that it involved oysters. You know, like...
Oh, yeah. I think this is common.
You know how, like, horsey sauce, for instance, at Arby's,
from Arby's
does not involve horses?
That you know of.
That I know of. But anyway, I think that it really was not until, you know, pretty late here in my ongoing culinary journey that I understood that oyster sauce actually involves oysters.
Okay, couple things. First of all, you've been riding a horse recently.
I have. I started taking riding lessons again for the first time in 24 years.
Have you ever stopped off on the way after your lesson at Arby's for horsey sauce?
Not
just
yet.
To like kind of thematically be consistent.
Not yet, but I haven't
been to Arby's in so long, and I think of myself as not liking Arby's, but I bet if we went, I would enjoy it, right?
I could go for the curly fries right now, actually.
Yeah. Oh, of course. Arby's famous seasoned curly fries.
Yes.
Okay.
Well, so now that we've established that there are no horses in horsey sauce, but there are oysters in oyster sauce, let's talk about what oyster sauce actually is.
I thought of one more memory lane. Oh. Can I do one more memory lane
before we
do that? You know where I would have encountered oyster sauce as a kid is at Chang's Mongolian Grill in Portland, which is like a Mongolian barbecue place where, you know, you pile your ingredients in a bowl and then you mix up your sauces.
Mm.
And oyster sauce would have been one of the sauces that you could ladle up. There was like a long period during which, like, I knew that there were a bunch of sauces and condiments used in Chinese cooking and even like had many of them myself before I started to understand like when you would choose one over another and how to combine them.
Yeah.
Because at the Mongolian barbecue place, I would just kind of like throw in everything.
Totally. You were like, this tastes good and this tastes good and I like you and I like you. And I could go into the whole Oprah, you get a car thing here, but I'm going to skip that.
Yeah, no, every time I went to the Mongolian barbecue place, I got a car, and it became a problem because I had to build this big garage, and Jay Leno kept coming over and wanting to drive my cars, and Jerry Seinfeld.
Once again, we have the most current pop culture references. Jay Leno.
I made one the other day that I was like, this would have been, this joke expired in 1991, and like... should not have ever have been heard after that. But I can't remember what it was, and it's just as well.
Okay, well, if you think of it, like, I want to know it.
Okay.
So you let me know. Okay, so Matthew, I want to tell everybody about oyster sauce, because I found it interesting to learn about oyster sauce.
Please do.
So oyster sauce, in short, is any number of sauces made by cooking oysters. And there are like European oyster sauces, which were commonly used in the 1800s in French and English cooking, but we are not going to talk about those, all right? What we are talking about today is, I think, what most of the world thinks of when they think of the words oyster sauce, which is a kind of thick, kind of ketchup textured, dark brown condiment that is commonly used in cooking in China, Thailand, Malaysia, Vietnam, Cambodia, I'm sure other places I'm missing.
Yeah, you know, there's some like nerdy phrase that people use for ketchup, like it's a non-Newtonian fluid or like non-Euclidean geometry or something. Is that
it's an isosceles
triangle.
Does that
apply to oyster sauce too? It's an isosceles.
Yeah. It's a sauce. Oyster sauce. Oh my God. I'm moving
oyster
right
sauce-a-lis
on now,
triangle.
Matthew.
Yeah,
I'm
yeah.
leaving this behind. All right. So Matthew, at this point in our discussion of what oyster sauce is, we're going to time travel for a second here.
Oh.
Yeah, get ready.
Is this where we have our opportunity to once again like
ride the
if
way
we could
back
use
machine.
A time machine one time, say what we would do?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Cuz I know mine. I would go back to 1991. I would make that joke. No one would laugh at it even back then, and then I'd slink back to the present if it had a slink function on the time machine.
Well, what I'm going to do is I'm going to go back to the late 1800s instead.
Okay.
And I'm going to go back to the invention of oyster sauce and see if the story, the origin story of oyster sauce is true or not. Because Oyster sauce is one of those foods that, like, supposedly started out as an accident. People love to tell these stories about food, right?
People love accidents.
They do. They do.
They just can't look away.
Oyster sauce dates to the late 1800s. As legend has it, in 1888, this guy named Lee Kum Shung was running his food stall in Nanshui, which is in the modern-day Guangdong province, when he forgot about this pot of oyster soup that he was making.
Mm-hmm.
And when he remembered it many hours later, I mean, I don't know how he managed to work in this food stall without noticing the pot of oyster soup.
Well, there were probably a lot of other things boiling.
When he remembered it many hours later, it had reduced to a thick brown paste. He didn't want to waste it. I presume maybe oysters were a delicacy then, as
back
they are
then,
now.
Like, a popular motto was don't waste the paste.
Don't waste the paste. So he didn't want to waste it. So he decided to sell this brown stuff. And he tasted it beforehand. And he found it
Taste the paste.
He found it deeply savory. You know, you can imagine it had a caramelized quality.
I'm glad you specified that he decided to taste it before selling it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I sell a brown paste all the time, but I'm not going to taste it.
No.
This guy is a way better person than I am. Anyway, he decided to sell it as a seasoning for rice here in his food stall, and it was a huge hit. So he set up his own.
That reminds me, I was going to make rice to taste with oyster sauce, and I forgot.
Yeah, I brought some crackers into the closet to cleanse my palate. He set up his own company, which I think every single listener we have has probably seen on their grocery store shelves, because this company is the oyster sauce company. It's called Lee Kum Kee, and it was created by our friend Lee Kum Shung in the late 1800s. He set up this company to sell his sauce to all corners of China. And in the century since, it's become one of the largest food companies in the world.
I definitely have, I would say, at least 5 Lee Kum Kee products in my home at this time.
Yeah, I was at the grocery store this morning and couldn't believe, even just in a grocery store that doesn't have a great variety of ingredients for cooking Asian cuisines, they had 4 different types of sauces made by Lee Kum Kee.
Nice.
So yeah, oyster sauce is where it all began. Today they sell something like 200 different sauces. Anyway, so apparently, you know, whether or not you believe this accidental discovery of oyster sauce, the way that oyster sauce was made in the early days was pretty much like that. When they started making it commercially, they would boil oysters in these huge iron basins for half an hour. And then they'd remove the oysters to a sheet of rattan to dry them out. I don't know what they did with them afterward.
I assume they were sold as dried oysters, which, like, you know, if you go into a Chinese supermarket, you can find all kinds of dried shellfish, like dried scallops, which are used for making XO sauce. But also all of these things can be used as ingredients or just snacked on.
I wonder how much flavor they still have, though, after being boiled for half an hour. That was what I was interested in.
Probably some. And B, like we've talked about before, that like in Chinese cuisine, like foods that are pure texture are much more popular than in Western cuisine.
At any rate, the water that remained in the basins, like this oyster cooking water, was then reduced to what Wikipedia describes as a blackish sauce. Wikipedia.
So kind of like an oyster demi-gloss.
Yeah, it sounds like
it. I bet it's not made this way anymore.
It is not made this way anymore. So today, you know, what is thought of as true oyster sauce of good quality should be still made by like oyster extract. So, you know, the broth that is produced by boiling oysters in water. Apparently, the broth gets kind of opaque and white, sort of like clam juice that you would buy.
Okay, that makes sense.
And then it's reduced until you get to the desired viscosity, and it caramelizes naturally to a brown color. So in true oyster sauce, apparently, this is again according to Wikipedia, there shouldn't be other additives. So it would just be that like reduced oyster extract.
I bet you can still get oyster sauce made this way, like at a, you know, a luxury food store in Hong Kong. And I bet it's like $50.
Oh, yeah. I bet it is prohibitively expensive. So today there are, you know, as we might guess, a bunch of shortcuts that allow us to get like a similarly flavored sauce more quickly and cheaply. So good ones still use oyster extract, preferably as the first ingredient. But there's also a base made from sugar and salt and thickened with cornstarch. Some types, and I don't know if these are ones that our guests today would recommend or that you would recommend, but some are, they have added flavorings like soy sauce or MSG to give a deeper flavor and color. Sometimes they have caramel color.
Sure.
But, you know, in high quality oyster sauce, it'll be naturally dark from the reducing process.
I mean, this is something that I think about a lot. You taught us about like the original oyster sauce, like the real stuff made of nothing but like oysters and water boiled down until it's like an impossibly savory paste. And like that is in a sense the real stuff. And yet like the oyster sauce that you and I and probably everyone else on earth has have been eating like all their lives is mostly going to be the stuff made with a little bit of oyster extract and a lot of MSG and sugar and caramel color. And like, on the one hand, that seems like not ideal, but on the other hand, it is tasty. And like the dishes that we make with it are like designed with that type of sauce in mind, I think.
Yeah. I mean, I'm trying to think if there's anything analogous to this in, you know, any other foods that we encounter this same way. I mean,
yeah, I think there must be.
Like foods where the original idea is far too expensive or difficult, and so we've all become accustomed to a modified version.
Yeah, I'm gonna think of it.
Okay, great. Well, anyway, Lee Kum Kee still uses oyster in their oyster sauce. They're just using extracts, but that's about the best you can do these days, as we're discussing.
Yeah, and I know Lee Kum Kee has like at least three different levels of oyster sauce, like the cheapest one that has the panda on the label, the next one up that has like a person in a boat.
It has two people in a boat, and that's the premium oyster sauce, right?
And then I think there's a there's one above that that's like comes in a small jar, maybe, but I could be thinking of a different sauce.
Well, in any
case,
maybe
our guest will know.
Something that I learned while researching this episode is that like a lot of oyster sauces are labeled oyster flavored sauce, and and that isn't necessarily apparently like a sign that it's that things are not good in there. But you just whatever you do, you need to check the ingredient list and only purchase ones that contain actual extracts or actual oyster extract, preferably as the first ingredient. So anyway, Matthew, this stuff, I mean, we're going to be doing a full-on tasting here, a blind tasting.
Even, oh, I'm excited, yeah.
But how would you, just off the top of your head, like describe the flavor that oyster sauce gives to things?
So that's a really good question. You know, I used to live in New York for a short time and really enjoyed like the corner Chinese American restaurant that you would order from near your house, near your apartment in New York. Like every place, any neighborhood in New York, like there is going to be one on your street. And typically there will be dishes made with a sauce that is just called brown sauce.
Okay.
And I think oyster sauce is key to that brown sauce flavor. And it's got like a flavor element and a textural element because like, you know, like hoisin sauce, it's got a viscosity to it that carries through into the finished dish and the texture of the sauce in the finished dish. And so like if you're using oyster sauce or hoisin sauce, like you don't need to use as much starch to thicken a dish. And so that's and it has like a different because the viscosity is coming from like probably like pure like more refined starches than cornstarch and sugar. It's gonna have like a kind of a smoother texture to it. But the flavor itself, like I just like it doesn't taste like oysters. It just tastes kind of savory and brown.
Yeah, it's interesting. It has a sweetness to it that I had not thought about before. So, like, okay, so as a kid, I loved beef with snow peas. Or beef with broccoli.
Oh, yeah.
Would there have been oyster sauce in that, do you think?
Maybe. Like, I think of beef and snow peas as being, like, more lightly sauced than that, like, to preserve, like, the color and flavor of the snow peas. But I don't know. Like, what kind of sauce did it have?
It was definitely, like, a brown, you know, a translucent brown slurry.
Yeah. I think probably oyster sauce was in there.
Great. I'll take that as a yes.
Beef and snow peas is like, I'm craving
so
some now.
Oh,
yeah, we're recording we're recording this like right before lunchtime. And like, it practically is my lunchtime at this point. And like, we're going to be like tasting some small amounts of oyster sauce and eating crackers, apparently. So I'm going to get real hungry. Yeah. Like, what was the thing we were talking about the other day? That wasn't you. That was something I was talking about with my brother.
Oh.
Sorry.
I hate it when you mistake me for your brother.
Like, I do two podcasts, and sometimes, like, I don't know which one I'm doing at any given time. Like,
it's cool.
I just don't know.
It's cool.
Like,
sometimes I mistake you for my sister.
That's cool. This episode is brought to you by MasterClass.
Matthew, take a minute and picture that thing that you've always wanted to learn.
All right, I'm picturing the thing.
Okay.
And you know, what if I get lost in the wilderness?
Well, okay, this is the thing?
This is the thing.
Oh, okay. Well, so picture learning it from someone who's literally the best at getting lost in the wilderness.
No.
In the world.
Don't understand, Molly. I want to get found in the wilderness.
Oh, okay.
So, and for that, I turn to Jesse Krebs, who is an internationally recognized expert on wilderness survival. She has a class on MasterClass, and she teaches like the five basic needs. And if you think number one is water, you're wrong. She teaches you how to use a knife, how to use rope, one of your most important tools in the wilderness. I don't think I'm going to get stuck in the wilderness, but if I do, I'm going to be really happy that I took this class on MasterClass.
Yeah, well, MasterClass is where you should go if you don't just want to think about learning something, but you actually want to do it with one-on-one classes with the world's best.
Yeah, if you want to learn singing from Christina Aguilera, if you want to learn shooting threes from Steph Curry, there's only one place in the world to do those things, unless you happen to know those people, which you don't.
Yeah, you don't. And every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, so there's no risk.
And right now, our listeners will get an additional 15% off an annual membership at masterclass.com/spilledmilk15.
That's 15% off right now at masterclass.com/spilledmilk15.
masterclass.com/spilledmilk15.
Vacations are always good. Sometimes they're even great. And Celebrity Cruises is about to ruin all of that. Because once you explore with us, you'll never want a vacation any other way. And with new quick Caribbean escapes, you'll never want a weekend any other way either. Celebrity Cruises. Nothing comes close. Visit celebrity.com, call 1-800-CELEBRITY, or contact your travel advisor. Ships Registry, Malta and Ecuador.
Today, we are thrilled to welcome J. Kenji Lopez-Ault. Kenji is a wildly popular New York Times food columnist and the chief culinary advisor for Serious Eats, and he's also the author of the acclaimed book, The Food Lab. You may also know him from his YouTube show, Kenji's Cooking Show, which has more than 1 million subscribers. Molly, we've got like a few million subscribers, right?
Yeah, I mean, let's not tell Kenji, but yeah, our show is huge.
Yeah. He's also written a New York Times bestselling children's book called Every Night is Pizza Night. And his latest book is The Wok, Recipes and Techniques, which just came out on March 8th and is probably already a blockbuster by now.
Yes. And I wanted to add a little something to your bio, which is that I love that in all the bios I saw of you online, that you never fail to mention that you are a parent and that one of your jobs, sometimes even your primary job, is being a parent. Anyway, I just wanted to say thank you to you and also to Matthew, who has been a stay-at-home parent as well, for like normalizing the fact that parenting is a real job for all kinds of people of all genders.
Oh, yeah. I feel like when you're when you're a parent, it's like, you know, it's like how vegans want everyone to know they're vegan.
Yes.
I feel like when you're a stay-at-home parent, you do want everyone to know that, like, you don't just screw around all day.
Yeah, but luckily, my kid is 18 now and doesn't require any more care or intervention on my part, according to them. And so my job here is done.
18, wow.
Matthew, you have successfully, though, raised a child.
I've successfully raised a child and now never need to deal with that ever again for any reason.
So getting back to oyster sauce.
Yeah, let's do it.
Kenji, what made you think to suggest oyster sauce for today's episode?
Oh, you know, well, the reason is actually because there has been this kind of like online buzz about this brand of oyster sauce. I apologize. My mouth is numb because I just came from the dentist. So I'm going to slur some words. There's been this online buzz from people in the know about this brand of oyster sauce called Mega Chef.
Yes.
Yes.
Which Grace Young, amazing Chinese food writer, great person. She has come out saying that Mega Chef is a great brand of oyster sauce, better than the Lee Kum Kee, who are the people who supposedly invented oyster sauce. So I thought it'd be interesting to taste them blind, because I've tasted them side by side and I have my own opinions on this, but I thought it'd be interesting to give you guys some blind samples.
Okay.
So that you can try them and we could see what people think of them.
Yeah, I'm excited to do this.
I'm interested to hear this about Mega Chef, because when we did a fish sauce episode, we talked a bit about Mega Chef fish sauce.
Yeah,
you know, among other things. So our listeners cannot see this, but I am holding up a little stack of what look like containers you might get takeout salad dressing in. Kenji dropped these off for me and for Matthew, and they are numbered. We're going to do a blind tasting of oyster sauces here.
It's actually double blind, because what I did was I have four containers also, larger containers, that I divided oyster sauces into, and I labeled them A, B, C, D. And then I had my wife come into the room and label them 1, 2, 3, 4 and not tell me which one is which number.
I'm so proud of myself. I just successfully unraveled one of the two pieces of tape holding them together.
No, this is going great. It's just really noisy. Give me a sec.
All right. Yeah. Step one, phase one complete. Moving on to sinister phase two.
Okay. I'm ready. This is so exciting.
When we're done with this, I'm going to have to text my wife and ask her to send me the key so that we know which one
is. Is she just like
which,
standing by just for this responsibility?
she works 9 to 5, so she's on her computer. So I don't even know if she'll respond, but hopefully she will.
Yeah, wow. What if it just remains a mystery?
I love that you were so thorough with this. You don't even have access to the key. This is really what we will do for food journalism. Okay, are we beginning with number one, and how are we going to do this tasting?
Yeah, I mean, I think we can begin with number one. I don't know. What do you do? Do you cup oyster sauce?
right.
Like warm up your hands and I don't know. I think we just taste it. I don't think you have to aspirate.
Yeah,
or anything.
I thought I got a spoon, but I didn't. So I might just use my finger. And as a palate cleanser, I have Santita's brand tortilla chips. Okay. Just so I can choose the loudest food possible that's also in the loudest bag.
I think we should kind of smell first.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
Okay.
So and ask questions
later. Are we
going
with number one first?
Yeah, I'm going to smell number one first.
Okay. I like the smell of it.
It's kind of caramelly.
It's pretty straightforward compared. Well, spoiler alert, Matthew and I both made a recipe from your new book last night. Mm. This oyster sauce tastes different from the one I use.
Okay, okay. Interesting. See, because this one like tastes to me like what I think of as like supermarket brand oyster sauce, like not very much oyster flavor, but like thick and sweet and caramelly. Mm-hmm.
It has, I mean, it does have that, like, you know, oyster sauce always has that balance of sweet and salty.
Yes.
And then like lots of umami, like lots of like kind of MSG-ish flavor.
Okay. What about number two?
Yeah. I don't think any of these are going to be bad.
Ooh,
by any means.
Number two has a much, it has more of like a oyster funk, like a cooked oyster funk smell.
Oh, very much so.
Yeah. When you smell it, for sure.
How about?
Oh, flavor too. This one is.
Oh, yeah.
Much more complex, much more.
Yeah, I think it's saltier than the first one. Mm-hmm. Like the salt, the salty to sweet balance is more on the salty side. Like I like this one much better than number one.
It has the smell of like when you grill oysters,
yes.
Like the like grilled oyster shell brine.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I need to like pause for a little palate cleanser.
Okay, yeah, I'm gonna eat a cracker.
Mm-hmm. I'm drinking some Coke because while I was getting my dental cleaning.
Your dentist recommended Coke.
Yeah, I listened to your Coke flavors episode and I realized I haven't had like original Coca-Cola in years. I usually get Coke Zero.
Yeah.
Raspberry Coke Zero from the Freestyle Machine, which I was surprised you didn't. Well, I don't know if you tried it, but I'm surprised you didn't mention it because it's the best flavor.
Oh, we tried Raspberry Coke. It was very jammy. Like it tasted like raspberry jam to me. Okay, are we going on to number three? This one also has a more oystery, cooked oyster kind of smell.
We're on number three, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Whoa.
Oh, yeah.
This one is even saltier.
Does it seem more viscous to you also?
I think so, yeah. Like just based on like tilting the container.
This one had a real like tang. It kind of zinged at the tip of my tongue.
This is so interesting. I feel like this confirms like every time we do a tasting of things that you would expect might be indistinguishable in flavor, never turn out to be indistinguishable in flavor.
Okay.
I feel like it has like a little bit more bitter seafood flavor. Like you know, like when you eat a clam, it's like sweet at the beginning and then bitter.
Yeah,
it has a little more.
I feel like
bitter.
We've traveled a gradient from like 1 to 2 to 3. Like they're getting like funkier and saltier as we go. Mm-hmm. Let's see if that trend continues.
Oh, whoa! Number 4 smells so different.
The trend didn't continue. This one is back to smelling very, very sweet and mild.
What is this smell? It's almost like a burnt sugar smell.
That's what it is. Like this one tastes like more caramel than anything else.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Hang on. Oh.
Hmm. That still doesn't taste bad.
Oh, no, none of them are bad by any means. Like we were saying before you came on that like that a lot of the dishes that like I have very fond memories of like when I lived in New York and like getting at the neighborhood Chinese American restaurant are certainly made with like the cheapest level of Lee Kum Kee oyster sauce. And like that stuff is not made with very much oyster, but it's not bad at all.
Right.
My guess is that number 2 is sort of the least expensive grocery store product, maybe with the least amount of oyster extract.
Number 2. Interesting.
Sorry, number 1. Number okay. 1. I'm sorry.
Number 1. One.
Either I'm going to guess that. So last night I used Lee Kum Kee premium oyster sauce.
That's the one with the boy on the boat.
And I'm guessing that is either number 2 or number 3. Maybe 2.
Mm-hmm.
And number 4, I really don't know what the story is with number 4.
Can I guess?
Yeah.
Here's my guess of what we tasted just based on what I know about the oyster sauce market, which as a commodities trader is a lot. I think we tasted Lee Kum Kee, like basic Panda label one, Lee Kum Kee premium, the Thai Macro, and the Mega Chef.
I can't remember the Thai brand, but one of these is a Thai oyster sauce. Yeah, so there's Mega Chef, the 2 Lee Kum Kees, and a Thai.
Okay, here's my guess. I think 1 and 4 are both Lee Kum Kee, and that the premium is not that different from the non-premium, and that 2 and 3 are Mega Chef and the Thai brand, but I would not have any idea which is which. That's my guess.
Okay.
On the other hand, I'm also not going to be surprised if Macro is turns out to be super sweet and mild.
I feel very certain that number 2 is Lee Kum Kee premium.
Interesting.
Then number 2 is Lee Kum Kee premium.
Okay.
Okay. Okay. Kenji, you got to find out.
Yeah, if you can't get this information.
I might have to run downstairs for a second. Can you give me like 5 seconds to run down?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Okay, Matthew, I'm going to be so bummed.
I haven't been any more excited about anything in months.
I have no words for what I'm feeling in this moment. Oh, my God, I think he's coming back.
Hopefully he has a paper.
Oh, my God. Here he comes. Oh, I can't wait. I'm so excited. I can't wait. Oh, man.
Okay, so number 1 was Mega Chef.
Oh, okay.
Oh, wow.
Number 2 was Lee Kum Kee Cheap Panda.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
Number 3 was Lee Kum Kee Premium.
Okay.
Wow.
And then number 4 was the Thai.
So I was as wrong as I could have possibly been.
I can't believe
that is so
Matthew,
interesting.
Well, you grouped the Lee Kum Kees together.
Matthew, I feel like you usually have a more discerning palate than I do, and I am shocked. I mean, I mixed up which Lee Kum Kee was which, but I called them as 2 and 3.
I think it's also not necessarily a palate, but more just that you have an association with Lee Kum Kee being, I don't know, faker, or maybe that Mega Chef's reputation precedes it, and you assume that it's going to be the stronger tasting one.
So what if we, Kenji? We have a segment on the show called "What Have We Learned?" A segment that doesn't really exist.
What have we learned? I mean, like, is it a good thing that the Lee Kum Kee ones are so much more assertively oystery?
I mean, personally, I think it is. Like,
I do too.
I do like the Lee Kum Kee, and so actually, I was honestly surprised when I got the bottle of Mega Chef and unblind tasted them myself a couple months ago, because I thought the Lee Kum Kee was actually much more oystery tasting. But, but that was not a blind taste test. But now that you two have also tasted, I'm like, oh, I guess it is more oystery. What dish did you guys cook from the book?
We both made the noodles with butter and oyster sauce.
Okay. Yeah. So noodles with oyster sauce and some kind of like steamed green is just like the simplest sort of lo mein dish in China, right? Like you boil noodles and then you put oyster sauce, a little bit of the cooking water, maybe some stock, and then some greens. And so that's like a real simple way to have a delicious bowl of noodles, but also to kind of just taste your oyster sauce, right? In Thailand, like a very common dish would be water spinach or broccoli with little bits of crispy pork belly and oyster sauce, stir fried in oyster sauce. Also common in China to have like greens with blanched greens with oyster sauce. There's a great recipe if you go to Walks of Life. They have a really great recipe for blanched romaine with an oyster sauce, which is like I stumbled upon it because I think I saw it on their Instagram, and they're like, whenever you buy romaine, you get those like 3 packs of romaine heads, and then you make like a Caesar salad, and you're like, oh crap, now I have to eat 2 more Caesar salads. And they're like, when you do that, instead, just like cook the romaine and cover it in oyster sauce. And they like, I exactly had in my pantry, in my fridge, like a bag of a 3-pack of romaine heads with 2 of them left over that I didn't know what to do. But when you cook it, it's really good, and it goes great with oyster sauce, and it becomes much smaller, so you don't have to eat it.
I had that dish. That was like the most memorable dish that I had at like a high-end dim sum place in Hong Kong a few years ago. That like, you know, I had like really good versions of dishes that I was familiar with, and then like this sort of like cast iron plate with some like sizzling greens. And as soon as I tasted it, like the texture, like, oh, this is lettuce, isn't it? And it was fantastic.
Yeah, hot lettuce. It's so like in China and a lot of parts of Asia, it's like. You would never have raw vegetables, right? You would always cook them like iceberg lettuce, romaine lettuce, whatever your greens are, you would cook them. Whereas here it's like, it's weird. The concept of eating hot lettuce is weird.
Stir fried cucumbers, also good.
We should do a whole episode on hot lettuce.
We should do
hot vegetables.
The episode will be called You Didn't Know How Hot It Could Get. No, we'll call it hot lettuce. I think we should do a hot lettuce episode because like grilled romaine is so good too.
Mm-hmm. Oh, sorry. Other oyster sauce dishes. So very common in like Chinese American cuisine. So like if you're familiar, are you familiar with Springfield style cashew chicken?
Oh, I've heard of it, but I have never had it.
So it comes from Springfield, Missouri. And so it's basically like Southern style fried chicken that's served with oyster sauce and fried cashews. And it's one of those sort of crispy, saucy Chinese American dishes that predates every other. It's like older than General Tso's. It's older than like crispy orange beef or orange chicken. Like it's the earliest Chinese American crispy saucy dish. But it's the sauce for it is essentially just kind of doctored up oyster sauce that you drizzle on.
I wonder why it didn't penetrate beyond Springfield, Missouri, because it seems like something everyone would enjoy, right?
I've never been to Springfield, Missouri, but from what I understand and from watching documentaries and reading it, it's like everywhere in Springfield. I don't know why it hasn't come elsewhere.
Is oyster sauce involved in versions of chicken rice, like Hainanese chicken rice?
Yes, it's common to have oyster sauce as a dipping sauce on the side for that very often. Yeah.
Where does it show up in Thai cooking?
Okay, so I would say the two dishes most familiar to Americans that you would find it is stir-fried greens, so generally like water spinach or broccoli with the crispy pork and oyster sauce. That's one dish. And then also in pad krap pao, like ground pork stir-fried with oyster sauce, soy sauce, and basil.
Okay.
Those would be like the two real classic uses of Thai oyster sauce.
Okay.
I was wondering if you were going to throw a vegetarian oyster sauce in as a ringer.
I didn't.
Have you tasted it straight?
I can't remember the last time I have. Yeah, I'm sure I have at some point, but I can't remember the last time I did.
Okay, so we tasted these 4 oyster sauces, and like they easily fell into 2 categories, sort of like the sweet and mild versus the funkier and saltier. Like now that you know this, are you going to use this information as the basis for choosing an oyster sauce to use for a particular dish? And if so, how?
I mean, I tend to always like, you know, I don't like having like a zillion. I mean, I do like having a zillion things in my kitchen.
Yeah, but I do too.
I don't need more than 1 bottle of oyster sauce in my kitchen, I think. So I mean, I generally always have the Lee Kum Kee premium at home, and I would use that for virtually everything. I mean, I can't personally think of a situation where I'd want to use the others. You know, although I guess the Thai oyster sauce does have a kind of distinctly sweeter, more caramelly flavor that maybe would go better if you're really looking for like to recreate that. You know, that Thai street food or whatever it is from your restaurant, your favorite restaurant,
right.
Then maybe you would have some Thai oyster sauce on the side as well. But But I make those dishes with the Lee Kum Kee stuff and they taste good to me.
Yeah, me too.
I'm so surprised by the Mega Chef. I'm really surprised. I think that I would not even identify it necessarily as oyster sauce. It doesn't taste, it doesn't have any oyster flavor to me.
I'm going to look up the ingredients right now. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because I will often buy the Thai brand because like years ago, someone told me that's the best. You should get this one. And I didn't like really do any experimentation beyond that. But like Lee Kum Kee is what I have in my fridge right now. And I feel good about buying that in the future, either the original or the premium, because I thought they were both the ones with the most flavor.
Yeah. Hey, so looking at Mega Chef. So Mega Chef is also a Thai brand. So, you know, yes. So part of these flavors differences could also just be that.
Yeah, that's true.
Thai oyster sauces tend to be less oystery and more sort of sugary, caramelly. But if you look at the ingredients of Mega Chef, it has the shortest ingredient list of all of them, I think. Oyster extract, water, sugar, salt, cornstarch, and potassium sorbate, like a preservative. Whereas Lee Kum Kee premium sauce is also oyster extract, sugar, water, MSG.
Okay. Right.
And then basically everything else is the same. Salt, cornstarch, flour, and caramel. Color.
Yeah, so I guess I don't want to say that that we are like picking on the sauces that are like tuned for Thai cuisine mm-hmm. rather than the ones that are tuned toward the flavors of Chinese cuisine and saying one is better than the other.
Well, personally, I struggle a little bit with how very oystery. I mean, I like oysters, but I struggle a little bit with how very oystery the Lee Kum Kee is. So actually, I mean, I think I would be more inclined to enjoy. If a dish is like very oyster sauce forward, I think I'd be more inclined to enjoy it with one of these two Thai oyster sauces than the Lee Kum Kee. But it is interesting to think about because I think I figured that oyster sauce was going to be best or like most correct somehow if it were the most oystery one.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, you blew our minds, Kenji. Thank you. Now, like you've like set a standard that you could not possibly live up to because I'm expecting like another sauce delivery tomorrow.
Yeah.
It's going to be just as illuminating.
I was actually just kind of wondering when Kenji was going to come like today and bring like all the chili crisp for our next episode.
Yeah.
Which we're doing in a minute.
All right. Kenji, anything about oyster sauce that you'd like to add that we didn't get to? And also tell us about your new book.
One useful thing I found about oyster sauce. So I mean, I cook a lot of Japanese food at home, but currently, because we have a new baby in the house who has like severe intestinal issues, Audrey, who's breastfeeding him, is on like a very restricted diet, so we can't have corn protein, wheat protein, milk or dairy. So soy sauce has become like a thing that we can't use at home. And the other day I was braising daikon, which I typically do in dashi with mirin and soy sauce. And then I was like, oh shoot, I can't put the soy sauce in here. But I tried using some oyster sauce in place of the mirin and soy sauce because it has that same kind of, the sweetness of the mirin and the savoriness of the soy sauce. And that actually worked really well. So that would be my one very esoteric.
Yeah, that sounds good.
Use of oyster sauce is that if you can't have soy protein and you are braising daikon or perhaps even braising other things, oyster sauce is a good substitute.
Nice.
Okay. I mean, I do feel like especially like the less oystery ones like could be a thing that like, you can add a tablespoon of fish sauce to any stew from any cuisine and it's going to make it better. I feel like that could work with as long as you didn't mind a little sweetness.
If you think of like Chinese American food, it is like the base flavor of a lot of super common dishes like beef with broccoli is made with oyster sauce.
We were talking before you got here about how like when I would get Chinese American takeout in New York, like often like it's like such and such with brown sauce.
Right.
And I think that was developed as a euphemism like before people were ready to hear, non-Chinese customers ready to hear with oyster sauce.
Yeah, right? It would be some combination of like oyster sauce, wine, Chinese wine, soy sauce.
Yep.
Sugar and then like some sauteed aromatics, but that's like the flavor I think that permeates most Chinese American, especially like I think New York style Chinese American stuff.
All right, tell us about The Wok.
The Wok is my new book. When is this airing? Is it already out? I guess it's already out.
It's already out.
Oh, cool. All right, it's already out. Thank you everybody who bought it. Everybody in the world who bought it the first week it came out. I don't have to tell you about it because you've all already read it. But it's a book about cooking in a wok that is aimed primarily at a English-speaking audience that grew up in the West and so is familiar with all sorts of Asian cuisines, but might not be quite familiar with sort of the techniques that you use in a wok. Because, sure. I think one of the big misconceptions about wok cooking is that in order to cook well in a wok, you need this like super high-powered Chinese restaurant burner.
Right.
And I don't know exactly where that misconception stems, but I think it largely has to do with the same reason that I had the misconception, which is that my idea of what Chinese food is was colored by the fact that I grew up going only to Chinese restaurants, right? I didn't have a home Chinese cook. I went to right. Chinese restaurants, and I went mostly to Chinese restaurants that were influenced by sort of Cantonese and Hong Kong style cuisine, which often do use really high heat. So dishes like beef chow fun, where you get that like super mm-hmm. smoky wok hei flavor, unless you do some secret tips and techniques and tricks that I demonstrate in my book.
Yes.
Unless you do those, you don't get that smoky flavor. But there are hundreds of millions of people in the world who cook in woks every day that don't cook in restaurant kitchens. They just cook in their home kitchen. And so the wok, I've had the same wok since I was in college, so 20 something years. It's like by far the most useful and used pan in my kitchen. I use it multiple times a week. I used it to cook for myself in college. I used it to cook when I was single and like had dinner parties. I use it to feed my family now. So it's just a super versatile, inexpensive pan that you have this one pan and a spatula, and you can make this, you can make like hundreds of different dishes. And it's not just stir fries. You can braise, you can simmer, you can make noodles, you can make rice. It's just like a super versatile tool.
Awesome. Well, congratulations on the book's release.
Thank you.
I have a running dad joke about my wok, which is that once a week or so after cooking something in the wok, I say, hey, the seasoning on this wok is starting to get really good. And I've had it for 12 years. So cooking probably two or three times a week for 12 years. And it's true. The seasoning is getting really good now.
That is a good dad joke. I should take that one.
Yeah, please. You can have it. Because as you know, my parenting responsibilities are now done.
Do you want to hear my favorite dad joke?
Yes.
We'll determine that after hearing that.
How do you know when something is a dad joke?
Yeah. How?
It's a parent.
Oh, that's a really good one. I like that
all
one.
All right.
Okay.
Kenji Lopez-Alt, thank you for joining us on Spilled Milk.
Thanks for having me.
Well, that was delightful.
Yeah, I feel like I learned so much. I mean, I learn a lot whenever Kenji comes on the show, but like when he delivers sauces, I learn even more.
Yeah, let's see if we can get him to deliver more sauces.
Yeah, let's make a goal. Like, how like you write down your goals, the universe makes them happen. Let's make a goal that like 1 year from now. No, let's be realistic. 2 years from now, we will have lured Kenji into like his job right now is like YouTube personality, best-selling author, food columnist, right?
Okay.
2 years from now,
I can't wait.
Somehow his job will have turned into like delivery person, like courier who just like delivers stuff.
Who just delivers sauces.
Yeah, and like somehow like it so smoothly has like transitioned from his current job that he won't even notice the moment when like it's crossed over into full-time courier.
I think he's going to be really excited to hear about this.
We'll get him like a truck, what colors of truck are already taken?
I was thinking you were going to get him a fixed gear bike.
We'll get him a fixie bike.
Mm-hmm. He's going to love riding all over town in that.
That guy's pretty hip. He probably already has one.
Yeah, it's true.
Okay.
Okay. So
let's go into segments and let's begin and end with our segment Now But Wow.
Oh, great. Okay. Well, my Now But Wow is a book that just came out on February 22nd. I pre-ordered this book like 6 months ago.
Okay.
I heard wonderful things about it from Emma Straub, author
Books
and
Are Magic.
Books Are Magic. Anyway, the book is called The Swimmers by Julie Otsuka. And it's a novel. And Matthew, you're going to think it sounds pretty depressing here when I describe the copy to you.
Well, I have a big question about the capsule.
Oh, okay.
But go ahead.
Okay, so here's the gist of it. All right, so this is the cover copy for The Swimmers by Julie Otsuka. The swimmers are unknown to one another except through their private routines. So, you know, who goes in the slow lane, the medium lane, the fast lane, and the solace each takes in their morning or afternoon laps. But when a crack appears at the bottom of the pool, they are cast out into an unforgiving world without comfort or relief. I'm going to stop there. So
yeah,
basically,
because this is my question.
So it sounds like it's going to become some sort of magical thing. They don't, as far as I understand, they don't go out through the crack in the pool. The pool closes.
Okay, that's what I was wondering.
Yeah, yeah. I found that confusing when I first read the
copy.
Well,
I mean,
I found
it more like beguiling than confusing. Because, like, I want to know what this means. Because, like, it has multiple possible interpretations. Because I'm sort of interpreting it as they've been swimming, like, nonstop 24 hours a day and suddenly have to go back out into the real world. I mean, like, come on. That's like a pretty cool magical realism premise, right?
Well, so the reason that I was drawn to this book, not only because someone whose taste I trust recommended it, but also, I know a lot of people who have taken up swimming in cold water.
Oh, wow.
Do you have friends who've done this as well?
No, I took up swimming like right before the pandemic started and haven't. No, I did go one time during a lull.
Okay.
But and I would like to go back, but not cold water, not warm water either. Like, it's got to be like the right level of lukewarm.
Okay. Well, anyway, I have a number of friends who've taken up cold water swimming in the winter, and I have a student who's written quite a bit about swimming in the writing group that I lead. Anyway, I was really interested to see somebody use the theme of swimming in a novel, mm-hmm. and especially the idea of, like, when the routine that you sort of cling to for normalcy is taken away,
yes.
like, what happens? So anyway, the book has just come out. I'm still waiting for my copy. It is called The Swimmers by Julie Otsuka.
I'm excited. Like, I agree that, like, that this doesn't sound like the kind of book that I would normally pick up, but I trust your recommendations, and I want to know more about this crack in the pool.
Yeah. Maybe there'll be like a children's version of this book in which they do go through the crack and they come out on the other side, and there's like an ice queen, and there's a fawn.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, like a Lion, the Witch, and the Crack in the Pool.
Yes. The Lion, the Witch, and the Kraken. Wait, maybe the crack in the pool is a kraken.
Maybe so. I think Julie Otsuka is going to be horrified if she ever hears this. And hopefully she won't.
I mean, except for the part where we suggested that people buy her book, which is all any author cares about. So
anyway, thank you for listening to the show. Thank you, Kenji Lopez-Alt, for being our guest today.
Thank you, Abby Circatella, for being our producer and muddling through the mess of interview and non-interview segments that we gave her this week.
Mm-hmm. If you want to chat with other Spilled Milk listeners, you can on our subreddit. It is reddit.com/r/everythingspilledmilk.
And until next time, thank you for listening to Spilled Milk, the show that... that went into the crack that opened up in your ear, which is your ear hole, and
we got reduced and came out as oyster sauce from your other ear.
Yeah, you've probably been wondering why a very savory paste has been coming out of one of your ears, now we've got the explanation for you. You're welcome.
Remember, don't waste the paste.
Don't waste the paste, but do taste the paste. I'm Matthew Amster Burton.
I'm Molly Weisenberg. Well, I'm Molly.
Because it seems like the mummy... Oh, sorry. I was going to continue talking about mummies.
Okay. I need to silence my phone.
Vacations are always good. Sometimes they're even great. And Celebrity Cruises is about to ruin all of that. Because once you explore with us, you'll never want a vacation any other way. And with new quick Caribbean escapes, you'll never want a weekend any other way either. Celebrity Cruises. Nothing comes close. Visit celebrity.com, call 1-800-CELEBRITY, or contact your travel advisor. Ships Registry, Malta and Ecuador.